You mentioned that your mom is Dr. Judy Morgan. Were you alive for her transition from the more conventional side to the holistic side?
I was. I saw people calling her a quack and crazy whatever. The traditional way of spaying and neutering is to remove all of the reproductive hormones.
You're literally removing an organ.
What are we hoping the alternative is, or what should we be asking at the vet?
Why not do that? Why isn't that normal? That's why I got a vasectomy on my male dog. He doesn't mark. He doesn't do all the stuff that people claim intact male dogs always do. I'm willing to let you use my dog as a guinea pig if you'll watch this video and do a vasectomy on him. And she said, well, sure.
Welcome to the BK Petcast. I'm Bryce. My wife, Kinsey, and I created this podcast to help you enrich and extend the lives of your dogs and cats. And today, we're joined by Gwen Campbell. As the daughter of two veterinarians, Gwen enjoyed growing up surrounded by animals. Though Gwen is an industrial and systems engineer by degree, she now uses that foundation in efficacy and optimization to improve the pet industry through her role as chief operating officer of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets. Gwen is a skilled, ethical business builder, specializing in scale-up of early-stage startups with limited resources and funding. In her spare time, Gwen enjoys taking deep dives into natural pet care research and loving life on the family's 20-acre farm with her rescue dogs, cats, horses, mules, chickens, and her human child, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast, Gwen Campbell. Okay, so Gwen, first of all, thank you so much for being on today. Like we were just talking about, I'm very, very excited to get into this topic, and it's cool to talk with somebody that's very knowledgeable about it. So we're just very appreciative for you joining us here.
Thank you so much for having me. And this is a really important topic for pet health and for pet parents to be educated on. So I am so excited to dig into it with you guys today.
I love it. So before we get into any of the actual questions, can you just give us a little quick synopsis? You know, we'll have our intro and everything, but can you just let our audience know who you are from your perspective?
Yeah. So I am the daughter of two veterinarians. So everybody can imagine my childhood was full of animals. And my mom actually owned a veterinary clinic. So I was very lucky. I got to go there almost every day after school. I witnessed surgeries and her doing veterinary medicine on almost a daily basis. And I lived on a farm. So I have always had animals. I'm a big rescue advocate. I have a little mini farm of my own. By degree, I'm an industrial and systems engineer. So I'm very math, science, research related person, very analytical person. And I was not happy with the engineering world necessarily. And I really wanted to pursue my passion working with animals. So I'm now the chief operating officer at Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pet. Dr. Judy is my mom. And so as an industrial systems engineer, it actually works very well with operations and scaling businesses. So that's my main role here. But I am a huge research nerd. So topics like this that have lots of research studies that are 30 pages long, that's what I love to dig into. I really enjoy those topics. So I'm a pet health advocate. I also am in the industry, but by degree, I'm an engineer. I'm a math nerd.
Very cool. So you mentioned that your mom is Dr. Judy Morgan, and I'm curious, were you alive for her transition from the more conventional side to the holistic side?
I was. It was interesting because so she first got exposed to Dr. Ian Billinghurst, kind of the father of raw feeding, when I was in maybe middle school, early high school. So, I mean, I was very well aware of the transition. And she started doing chiropractic, acupuncture, feeding whole food diets. And we witnessed firsthand with all of our animals. We would rescue many animals that come with varying diseases and levels of disasters, see them transform from these holistic therapies. So for me, it was always a no-brainer because I saw firsthand how well it worked. She got a lot of pushback. I saw people calling her a quack and crazy whatever because she was kind of on the forefront when it wasn't nearly as popular as it is today. But yeah, I witnessed it firsthand. Dr. Judy is literally the Dr. House of veterinarians. She's a one-of-a-kind, extremely skilled savant, essentially. Yeah. She's very good at what she does. We can argue about my other views as her, like from mother-daughter perspective, her style or her choices and things, whatever. I can question those. But when it comes to integrative veterinary medicine, she is one of the best in the world. It's pretty awesome.
That's incredible. So then the topic of discussion today, we're talking about spaying and neutering with your animals. And like we were talking about briefly before, this is a very hot topic. So can you just give us some background information to kind of get us caught up to speed on what the current practices are, maybe some of the issues with that, et cetera?
Yeah. So a few years ago, in the spay and neuter debate, they started discussing the age at which we should spay and neuter dogs and cats. And so it has gone both ways, where they wanted to be able to do pediatric spay and neuter in shelter scenarios. So at your 8 to 10 week range, you can have kittens and puppies sterilized and adopted out when they're still super cute and impressionable. And also for waiting. So some veterinarians wanting pets to be through maturity before doing spay and neuter. So that debate around the time of spay and neuter started to come up. Then when I entered the industry and we were having discussions around it, there was somebody that brought up the idea of tubal ligation, which is basically for humans, we call it getting your tubes tied, and just asked my mom, Dr. Judy, why, as a veterinarian, why couldn't you do that instead, theoretically? And she was like, well, I mean, theoretically, I could do that, but we just don't. And so that really got the wheels turning to start asking questions about, okay, why is spay and neuter so commonly accepted? Where did this come from? And how did we get to where we are today? So I discovered that this became more common practice in the 1930s-ish, so about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the 1970s that the ASPCA actually started implementing mass sterilization prior to adoption of animals. And so they saw a huge decrease in the number of animals that had to be euthanized every year, because in the early 1900s, the stray cat and dog population was a pretty significant issue. There were a lot of free-ranging dogs and cats. When this became more commonplace to spay and neuter your pets, we did see that dramatic decrease in the euthanasia of dogs and cats in shelters. However, the traditional way of spaying and neutering is to remove all of the reproductive hormones. So you remove the testes in males, and in females, we remove the ovaries and the uterus. It's called an ovariohysterectomy.
Wow.
So the way of sterilizing that became just traditional spay and neuter, what we call spay and neuter, is complete removal of the reproductive hormones. This is relatively recent, but I would say for the past 50 years, it has been the standard for at least rescue organizations. And that is when they started to really put some marketing behind spay and neuter, save lives for pets that don't have to be euthanized, decrease the amount of homeless pets, et cetera.
You mentioned the tubes tied. What is the equivalent for males? Is it, what's it called? Vasectomy?
Yes. So basically, there are sterilization options, which is something that a lot of pet parents don't even know. So for males, it's a little simpler. There are essentially two sterilization options. You can do a traditional neuter, which is to remove the testes completely, and that removes all of the reproductive hormones with it. There also is the option to do a vasectomy. And so a vasectomy actually clips, it's called the vas deferens, and you leave the testes intact, but they are sterile. They can't reproduce after, you know, a month or two after the vasectomy. So the difference for males is pretty straightforward. It's either you're removing the actual organs, the testes with the hormones, or you leave them intact. But either way, you will end up with a sterilized animal.
Got it.
For females, there are more options. There's actually four different options.
Wow.
So tubal ligation is leaving all of the organs intact and you're just doing the tubes tied procedure. So you are sterilizing the animal, but the ovaries and the uterus remain intact. There is the traditional spay, which is the opposite. It's the ovariohysterectomy. That's when you take everything out. You take the ovaries and you take the uterus out. There is an ovariectomy, which is commonly referred to as a laparoscopic spay, although that's more like the method of spay, but that's co more commonly what the shorthand is. And that is just removing the ovaries. So they will be sterilized, but you're removing the ovaries are producing those hormones. And then the fourth option is a hysterectomy, which is you leave the ovaries, but you remove just the uterus.
First question, are there health risks associated with the traditional spay and neuter? That's what I think we should address first.
The way I would like to answer your question is, what do those reproductive hormones impact?
Amazing.
So if we're just talking about removing the organs that secrete these hormones, so do we want to remove, let's just say, the testes and the ovaries, just to simplify things. When we're making those decisions, the testes and the ovaries are producing three main hormones. So for the testes, everybody associates that with testosterone, but they're also producing estrogen and progesterone. The ovaries, we associate that a lot with estrogen, but they are also producing testosterone and progesterone. So both the testes and the ovaries are actually producing the same hormones, just in different amounts based on what they are. So these hormones are associated with reproduction. They help us reproduce. They help make babies. However, they also impact behavior. So we hear that a little bit in the spay-neuter debate about how that will change the behavior of a dog or cat. It also impacts cognitive function, which is not nearly as commonly talked about, but I have a few studies that we'll get into later about removing those hormones. It also is involved in musculoskeletal development, which is why a lot of spay and neuter studies are looking into the development of joint-related diseases and the time we spay and neuter and correlating that to the development of musculoskeletal issues. Cancer, which is talked about a lot, whether or not we can develop or whether or not they will metastasize. The immune system's response and immune-mediated diseases. So these hormones that I'm calling reproductive hormones, but they are involved in so many more processes. So when we are discussing removing the ovaries or the testes, we're also talking about the impact to the immune system, the impact to the cancer risk, reproduction, behavior, endocrine, the entire endocrine system you're disrupting. And so after spay and neuter, they have a higher chance of becoming hypothyroid, and you'll typically see a thyroid issue. Atopic dermatitis, allergies, colitis, IBD, these are all things that are related to these reproductive hormones.
That's
And so
crazy.
you're disrupted, like they're part of the endocrine system. So removing them is disrupting the endocrine system, which is your pancreas, your pituitary gland, your hypothalamus. It's all connected to each other. And so this is a little bit of my beef when people just say, oh, just do like an ovary sparing spay and take the uterus. It's dormant. It doesn't have a role. I'm like, it's part of the endocrine system. You know, we can't just start removing organs from a system and expect that the system just keeps chugging along the way it was before. It doesn't work that way. So it's much more complicated. We boil down the spay and neuter debate to basically reproduction and behavior are the two common things that you really see talked about, but it is way bigger than that. We have a lot of other issues that are associated with these hormones, and we know from either rat models or even human studies that they have larger impacts. So I have some studies and some specifics that we can talk about today, but in general, this is a very, very big topic that impacts all of health.
I mean, you really don't realize. I think a lot of people think that, especially with like males and stuff, you get the testicles removed. It's just like getting, like a foot amputated or something, and it really doesn't do much to the entire system. But in reality, like you said, you're literally removing an organ. Think about if you removed your liver or your heart or your kidneys. Like we could spare one kidney, but
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was reading a study earlier, and this was with humans, and it actually stated that in males, age-related declining levels in testosterone was a strong indicator of mortality.
Whoa.
So, and a lot of the human studies actually can relate like a lack of these hormones and rates of mortality if not properly replaced with hormone replacement therapy. So we know in humans that it's a lot more complicated and that these hormones are directly related to longevity. But for some reason, we think in dogs and cats, we can just remove half of their endocrine system and everything stays intact, okay, which is not, we are learning that's not the case.
These innovative solutions, what are we looking for?
Yes, ma'am.
What are we hoping the alternative is, or what should we be asking at the vet?
That is a great question. So basically, on some of those hot topics that I was talking about, we do have studies. So from the Parsimus Foundation, which is actually a foundation that dedicates a lot of resources to this topic, hormone sparing sterilization for dogs and cats. So they are a great resource. It's just parsimus.org. And I actually got from them earlier today the list of what your pet is more susceptible to if you remove the testes or ovaries. So either an ovarectomy, ovariohysterectomy, or a neuter. So they will have, they will be more susceptible to cancer of the prostate, cancer of the bladder, bone, blood vessel, skin, and lymph glands, urinary incontinence, that's a big one, especially for spayed females, bladder and kidney stones, hip dysplasia, cranial cruciate ligament rupture, immune-mediated diseases like hyperthyroidism, diabetes, obesity, and aggressive and fearful behavior and dementia. So all of those areas where hormones impact our bodily function, cognitive function, endocrine function, reproductive function, behavior, immune system function, all of those are being impacted by spay and neuter. So when you're, for me, when I'm looking at sterilization methods for my pets, I actually, A feral dog ran onto the farm and adopted me. He picked me as his mother and wouldn't leave. So I rescued him, but I had the opportunity to get a vasectomy for him. And this was right around the time I rescued him, right around the time that we were learning more about these topics. So I asked Judy, I was like, Judy, how do I get my dog a vasectomy? And she was like, you're crazy. I don't know how to get a dog a vasectomy. But she was like, but there's the parsimus.org website. You can go there and see if there's any, you know, resources. And there's nobody in the area doing it. So they said, oh, maybe you can go to NC State Vet School. I reached out to NC State Vet School and said, can somebody give my dog a vasectomy? And they were like, maybe the soft tissue department can do it. And I was like, that sounds expensive. So that then I reached out to just our local vet and I said, hey, can you watch these educational videos for veterinarians and then try it on my dog and do a vasectomy on my dog instead of a neuter? And she thought, I think I was a little crazy, but she said, as long as you are fully understanding and signing off on the fact that this is the first time I'm ever trying this, like Judy can scrub in with me and oversee it, but I'm totally open to doing it on your dog. And so my dog, actually Marlo, he got a vasectomy and he got a little vasectomy tattoo that says he's sterilized. And he is an intact, hormonally intact, but sterilized male dog. Wow. And my main motivations for doing that is he came with some behavioral issues, and a lot of them were fear-based, and testosterone is nicknamed the confidence hormone. And so a lot of the research studies around behavior in dogs, you'll get a mixed bag of certain behaviors that are impacted by spay and neuter, but aggression can, especially fear-based aggression, can increase when you're removing testosterone, which to me makes sense. It's the confidence hormone. If it's already a pet struggling with confidence, you remove that, you know, it's just adding a bigger problem to the existing problem. And so he had some aggression issues that were mostly fear and resource-based. I absolutely did not want the chance of those being worse. And he also has the worst conformation ever. It's like he's just sprinkles of pieces of dogs that should never have been combined together. And I didn't want that potential increased risks in joint diseases later on in life, because his stifles don't even point in the right direction. Yeah. And I'm like, he needs all the help he can get in the joint department. And she charged me about the same price as a neuter. I'm sure if I had to go to some specialty center, they would have charged me out the wazoo. Once this becomes more common, I think especially vasectomies there's no reason they shouldn't be the same price once vets just get more used to it. With the females, it is a little bit more complicated because there are four different sterilization methods, and you have veterinarians that are able to do certain ones and not familiar with others. Yeah.
So, question for you. If somebody has gone through with the traditional spay and neuter, can you do hormone replacement therapy like you can for humans?
You can. There is a company called Dogosterone. Oh. Yeah, you can look it up. It's kind of fun. But yeah, it's hormone replacement therapy for dogs. And they have looked into doing the same for females with, I'm guessing, an estrogen, progesterone type medication. I don't think it's very common, but it is possible, like what we do with people.
We kind of talked about, you know, new literature coming out about whether you should spay and neuter your dog now or wait a while. Let's say somebody, for one reason or another, either wants to or has to go through with a traditional spay and neuter. In your opinion, what's the best way to go about that?
This is where it gets really tricky. So if you have a female, I'm going to say dog for now, because cats are polyestrous and they just cycle endlessly and can produce 5 million kittens. Oh. So they are a little bit trickier than dogs. Dogs only have typically a few cycles a year, a little bit easier to manage. So for me, at this current point in time, if I got a female dog tomorrow, I would want to get a tubal ligation. Keep all those hormones intact until at least we know more or better information. You can always do a spay later with tubal ligation because you're just sterilizing them. The only thing you can't do later is breed them. But you could remove the ovaries later if they're an issue. You can remove the uterus later if that's an issue. You could do both. I don't know any veterinarians offering that, but from a rescue perspective, that makes total sense to me. You could do it when they're young. They'll be sterilized. Then the pet parent could make the decision later on about if they need to remove other body parts. But if you only have the option of a traditional spay, it gets tricky because there are some research studies out there which you can look based on breed of dog. So some popular breeds like Golden Retrievers have been studied pretty well by UC Davis. Labradors and Vizslas have some studies. And there is one study that has 35 different dog breeds that you can look at. So they tried to break it down by dog breed, sex, and then age at spay and neuter, and then the probability of developing joint issues or aggressive cancers. When it comes to joint issues, generally speaking, not trying to associate for specific breeds, but generally speaking, if the longer they can stay intact, the less probability of developing a joint disease later in life, which to me, that logically makes sense because we're keeping hormones that are very involved in the musculoskeletal development process intact until they're basically full grown. And at that point, you know, it's a different phase of musculoskeletal just maintenance instead of development, and it's a little bit stronger from childhood. That makes mm-hmm. sense to me. However, when you look at Golden Retrievers and Vizslas, there were a few research studies that showed that spaying after puberty, after the first few heat cycles, can actually increase the risk of a few not so nice cancers.
Is that just kind of another feather in the cap of like every dog being a complete individual?
I think it's also like looking at the dog being an individual, but also the different categories of disease processes work very differently. So like musculoskeletal, if you can get through full growth, then at that point, if you spay and neuter later in life, they're fully grown. Like, yeah, their immune system function and some other things might not be up to snuff, but in general, the majority of the work is done. Versus with cancers and things like that, hormones may have a completely different impact at various life cycles. So they're not to get too nerdy into it, but I was looking at a research study on using ovariohysterectomy as part of the treatment plan for mammary cancer in dogs. So basically, they looked at dogs that developed mammary cancer and they split them into three groups. One was just intact female dogs, one was female dogs that were intact and then spayed within a close proximity of treatment for mammary cancer. And then they had a third group, which were dogs that were spayed earlier in life and then developed mammary cancer down the line. So like the time between spay and mammary cancer were years apart. And they found that actually the survivability was highest in the group that got spayed in close proximity to having mammary cancer
Interesting.
treatment. And then it was worse for dogs that were spayed earlier in life and worse for intact females. And so in the Wiesla study, this is actually a 2014 Wiesla study, the risk of hemangiosarcoma was greatest in females spayed after 12 months of age. It was lowest in intact dogs. And then it was in the middle, the risk was for females spayed before
That's
12 months
so
of age.
interesting.
So when we're looking at specifically Wieslas and hemangiosarcoma, it was actually worse. The risk was worse in dogs that were spayed later after they had undergone puberty. And I mean, we don't fully understand how all of these hormones and systems are working, even in humans, because this is still actually being researched pretty extensively in humans and about hormone replacement therapy in women. But it makes sense that it would be different to remove the hormones before they really are even a part of your life, before you go through puberty, than to have your body grow and adjust to these hormones and then you strip them
Yeah, that's
away.
really.
So it's like in one case, we're taking them away before the body really even adjusts to having them. And that has its own set of complications. The second scenario is we take those hormones away later in life, but the body's like, okay, but I grew up with these hormones. I've been using these hormones. Can I
Yeah,
have them
no
back,
kidding.
please? That's why I think just for holistic veterinarians, a lot of them are saying, okay, well, at least if you let them get through the fully grown and then you spay and neuter, at least you're reducing their risks for a lot of things. That's true. I think that's mostly true when it comes to growth-related diseases like musculoskeletal developmental type things. When it comes to cancer, I think it's a lot more complicated than that. I don't know that we understand yet. The timing of removing those hormones, I think, is very tricky and depends when it comes to things like
Yeah.
cancers.
So when can dogs actually start breeding? Is there like a specific age that that happens, or is it kind of different for each dog?
In generally, they'll say by 6 months they'll start to hit their puberty. For cats, it can be as early as
Oh, wow.
4 or 5 months. Generally speaking, around 6 months is when it starts becoming an issue. And so for me, I really am passionate about this because we don't even know all of the repercussions of lifelong what we're doing by stripping out these hormones. And there aren't any op people don't have any options. And so right now, if I had a fe I mean, my only female dog is a rescue and she was spayed when I rescued her, so I didn't have a choice. But if I were to have an intact female dog right now, and I had to make a decision, it would be really
Yeah.
challenging. A lot of people are resorting to an ovary sparing spay, which is a hysterectomy. You just remove the uterus and the cervix. That is an option. However, there also was a rat model that showed that just a hysterectomy, just removing the uterus, dramatically decreased memory capabilities in
What?
rats and impacted their cognitive function. And we actually posted about this on our page, and we had female women commenting that had hysterectomies, and we're like, I had the worst brain fog after I had my hysterectomy, and it was so challenging for me to focus. Like, this makes sense, and there is an ovary uterus brain
wow.
connection, and it actually impacts your uterus, impacts your cognitive function.
Uterus brain axis, like the gut brain
yeah,
axis.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is all connected. And so when we start to have these conversations and say that there's other options out there, then the whole, you know, spay neuter versus don't spay neuter debate gets really complicated because resources are an issue and not enough information
yeah.
is an issue. And people can't even agree on what options should be available.
It seems like a good time to give pet parents a disclaimer. Like, regardless of what you're going to do or what you have done, please don't feel any shame about this. Because like you were just talking
Absolutely.
About, Gwen, even the experts are still like, yeah, there's studies that talk about both. We don't really know right now. You know, like, it's still ongoing. So,
and this is your also confirmation if you're listening and this stuff is just flying over your head. I am right there with
it's
you.
A lot.
It is. Yes. No, it's amazing information, but I'm going to have to listen to this one a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
With like tying of the tubes, where does that fall into these like concerns about spay, don't spay, the different types of spay and like the uterus brain axis? Like, where does that fall into this?
Right. So now that you've heard the tubal ligation physically could be done on our cats and dogs, why not do that? Why isn't that normal? Well, my main answer is just that veterinarians aren't taught how to do it or that it's even an option. Mm. And a lot of ovary sparing spay has enough people have requested it that it's become more popular, more veterinarians are learning how to do it, and there's resources online on how to do it. Tubal ligation has not gotten that publicity yet. The two main reasons why some will advocate for removing the ovaries is, ovaries or uterus. Pyometra is a big one that you hear. That's an actual uterus infection. It can be fatal. It's very scary. And mammary cancer are typically the two things that we hear for females. For males, really quickly, I'll just dispel. Testicular cancer is another concern, but it's one of the most curable, treatable cancers. It's typically found early because they'll have an enlarged testicle, which you see or feel it doesn't look right, and then they remove usually both testicles.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
curative.
It's like what you were talking about earlier. It's like you can do this initially, and then if you run into issues like testicular cancer, you still have that option later on.
Absolutely. And so, like, my dog, if it my logic was, if potentially getting him a vasectomy increased the chances that his behavior will stay nice and he will be less likely to have a joint disorder and potentially a nasty cancer like a hemangiosarcoma or an osteosarcoma later in life, testicular cancer would be so easy on the grand scheme of medical disasters
yeah.
for me to treat. I would see, like, he's a short-haired dog. I would see he had an enlarged testicle, take him in. They would say, yep, he needs to be neutered. He'd get a classic neuter and be on his yeah. way the same day and considered cured. So for males, that's why I got a vasectomy on my male dog. His behavior has continued to improve with training. He's wonderful. He doesn't mark. He doesn't do all the stuff that people claim intact male dogs mm-hmm. always do. And so that to me is more a no-brainer than the females. The females is more challenging because of statistics of pyometra and mammary cancer. Pyometra, I think, kind of like testicular cancer, I can dispel now with a little bit more research in place. There was a research study within the last two or three years in non-specialized settings. So this was most likely like shelters, humane societies, just general private practices, not like the fancy specialist hospitals that you go to. And cases of pyometra had a 97%
wow.
survival rate. And the big thing was just getting the dogs to the veterinarian quickly. And I live with a veterinarian, essentially, next door. Pyometra is a uterus infection, and it is a hormone-driven process. It typically happens after a heat cycle. So removing either the ovaries or the uterus, or both, even if you just remove the ovaries, the chances of pyometra go down to basically zero because it's a hormonally driven issue. And so it becomes, as female dogs get older, pyometra, especially in certain breeds, becomes a lot more prevalent. And the risk of pyometra increases as they age, and it can be fatal. So that's why people, you might, when this podcast airs, we might get comments if somebody say, hey, I had a dog that died of pyometra, and it can be fatal. And I don't want to downplay those times that happens. But statistically speaking, which is where I'm coming from in this episode, it was survivable 97% of the time in a non-specialized setting, just with a spay. That was the treatment. They did an emergency spay. It was considered, you know, survivable, and the pets were able
to, I mean, to be 97% with non-specialized treatment and nothing beyond a spay seems like a high number in and of itself.
Yeah, well, they probably had to be on antibiotics or something like that, I'm sure. But yeah, just no high-tech specialized treatment needed. So for me, I don't think pyometra, if I had an intact female dogs, I do not think that pyometra would impact my decision greatly. Of course, if you have a breed that has a higher chance of developing pyometra later in life, there are different ways that you can support them through that. And you need, the biggest thing is just being vigilant as a pet parent as they get older. Pyometra, I put kind of in the category of not a reason not to get a tubal ligation. Mammary cancer, on the other hand, is where it gets tricky. Some breeds have a high likelihood of developing mammary cancer. In dogs, it's less likely to be malignant than in cats. Cats definitely have an issue with mammary cancer, and it can be malignant and really nasty more frequently. So the main reason I would say to remove the ovaries would be a mammary cancer concern. For me, I still think I would leave my personal female dog with her ovaries intact, but there are certain breeds do have more research on the probability of developing mammary cancer.
Malignant means cancerous, correct? Like the opposite of benign?
Yeah, just like it has spread and it's going to other places and bad. Because mammary tumors, sometimes in dogs, older intact female dogs, I've seen it where they have small mammary tumors that are just, you know, right along a nipple or something, and they can be removed, and those dogs live long, happy lives. In cats, it can be really aggressive where it metastasizes into lymph nodes and other places, and that's not good. I kept my male cat intact until he was one year old, and I was strongly considering leaving him intact. He was an indoor-only cat. I ended up neutering him purely out of just feeling like it. Yeah, I was supposed to. I have heard of people doing vasectomies on cats, but it is really rare and I think would be hard to find a veterinarian to do that. But for my indoor-only cat, I would have totally gotten a vasectomy for him if I could have.
For our listeners, how can they find a vet to do some of these alternatives to traditional spay and neuter?
That's a great question. I think right now one of the main resources is going to be parsimus.org. And so they actually have resources for veterinarians as well. They have some how-to videos so veterinarians that have never done one before can for free learn how to do some of these procedures. And so for veterinarians, I think this is a huge opportunity to offer more services that people want, and you can learn how to do, you don't have to invest any money into learning how to do it. And it also has resources on there for pet parents. It has a directory on there. A main resource that a lot of our clients use is social media, because there is a large Facebook group called Ovary Sparing Spay and Vasectomies, I believe. That a core function of it is for people to find veterinarians and professionals near them for That's these awesome. Special procedures. So if parsimus.org doesn't have anything in your area, I would encourage people to join that Facebook group called Ovary Sparing Spay and Vasectomies for Pets. And they might be able to find a practitioner within a few hours of them. And you can also do like what I did, where I have a local traditional vet that is a decent surgeon, and I just said, hey, I'm willing to let you use my dog as a guinea pig if you'll watch this video and do a vasectomy on him. And she said, well,
that's
sure.
Awesome. So Gwen, I think people are going to find a lot of value in this. So where can they find you? Where can they find more of these resources, stuff like that?
Yeah. So you can find me at Dr. Judy Morgan on all platforms. That's Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads. I don't even know what else is out there. But on drjudymorgan.com, which is also naturallyhealthypets.com, and you just search sterilization options for males or females, we have a series of blogs on the different options and some of their pros and cons. We also have a blog on there called Supporting Spayed and Neutered Pets, because a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are going to have a pet yeah. that is already spayed or neutered and appreciate this information, but want to know how to support totally. Their specific pet. So we have a blog on drjmorgan.com about what you can do to support your pet if they have already been spayed or neutered or sterilized in a different way.
Okay, amazing. And like I said, we'll link all of that down in the show notes so that if you're listening, you can definitely check that out. Gwen, thank you so much, truly. Like,
awesome.
This was incredible. Thank you for coming on and not only educating our audience, but us as well. Like, we learned a lot during this episode, yes. So we really appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was yes. just the tip of the iceberg, and this is going to be a topic that is going to be prevalent in the holistic pet care space and the entire pet care space for years to come. It is gaining a lot more attention now, and as pet parents learn that there are more options with different benefits, they are pushing to learn more. So we're not done talking about spay and neuter. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, we'll need an episode 2 and probably many more after that. Thank you so much, Gwen. And if you're listening to this, thank you so much for choosing to spend your time with us. As always, I'm Bryce.
I'm Kinsey.
And we'll see you in the next episode. Welcome to the BK Petcast. I'm Bryce, and my wife Kinsey and I created this podcast to help you enrich and extend the lives of your dogs and cats at home. And today, we're joined by Dr. Katie Woodley. Dr. Katie Woodley is an expert holistic veterinarian and founder of The Natural Pet Doctor, who is passionate about integrating Eastern into Western medicine to help pets achieve optimal health and vibrancy through nutrition, acupuncture, emotional health, and herbal medicine. Her mission is to make sure pet parents know that they have options to support their pets, whether through illness or maintaining optimal health through an integrative approach. Dr. Woodley provides mentorship and holistic pet guidance, as well as support to pet parents and pet professionals across the world with her online Healthy Holistic Pet for Life Blueprint program to help break down the barriers of not having access to a holistic veterinarian and provide hope and confidence that there are ways to help your pets thrive naturally, as well as find and truly heal the root cause of disease. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Katie Woodley.